Take their seats. All right, we're going to start with our final panel of the day. If everyone would please take their seats, we'll get started in just a second. All right, welcome. It's 4:30, which I know is a real difficult time of the day to get going for the last panel, but we have an hour left in Triple E today. For the fourth year in a row, Julie Brinkerhoff Jacobs, president of Lifescapes, has agreed to do the panel. This one's on open spaces, the invisible anchor, talking about invisible spaces and open air and open-air centers. Thank you. The first people we contacted when we launched EEE 5 years ago, and she was enthusiastic about the idea, has been an incredible supporter of this conference and has served as a moderator for 4 years in a row of the panel. Julie, take it away. Thank you.
Thank you. So, can you guys hear me?
Yes.
I know. First of all, I want to welcome everyone and to our panel discussion, Open Space, the Invisible Anchor. I'm honored to share with you that more than several of the destination-driven projects that our keynote speaker, Ashley Robinson, described as successful examples of what she's tracking are ones with which many of us have been involved. And my company, which is Lifescapes International, has been around for 60 years, and we've always had the belief that beauty is good business. And I think now is our time. We did a lot of work on hospitality, we're doing a lot of work with retail, and I do believe that beautiful gardens are paramount to a lot of projects, large and small, and people love being in them. So with that in mind, I wanted to do a couple of things. One is that I'll provide some brief introductions of our speakers, probably more brief than I would like, but brief introductions to each of our speakers, which projects they're going to talk about, what they've done, their challenges, their opportunities, and so forth, and what design and features they are adding to their properties moving forward, what has worked, what has not worked. Jerry, he told me that like 5 times. Talk about the good, the bad, and the ugly. So that's what I'm going to do. That's what we're going to do. And then if we have any time whatsoever, which I'm not sure, I'm going to come over here, then we'll do Q&A. If we don't have the time, I'm going to do an executive summary of all the key points that are made here, and if you give me your cards, I will send them out to you. And tomorrow morning, if anybody's going to be awake, it's for the 7:30 to 8:30 panels. We have one called, Enhancing Open Spaces. We can continue a dialogue with those of you who want to come tomorrow morning. So I will stop this at 5:30 because I know exactly where everybody wants to head. So I'm going to go ahead and start with a very, very brief introduction, like I mentioned. And the first person I'd like to discuss is Wick Zimmerman, who's the CEO and co-founder of Outside the Lines. We've had the honor of doing business with these guys. They do water features all over the world, and they've been a part of many of our successful projects. And he's also based here in California, as we are. He is the company's strategic director and directs its financial operation systems quite well. But you know the nice part about these bios that you only really read, even though I've known them for years, that you find out, is that they do a lot of really wonderful philanthropic activities in this community. One of them is called Taller San Jose in Santa Ana, California, and he helps disadvantaged youth escape poverty by providing training and job skills. Now that's wonderful. So yeah, no kidding. And then following him will be Sean Slater, who is a principal of architecture firm Retail Design Collaborative. Sean was recently honored with the ULI Institute's prestigious AGPAR Award for co-authoring New Suburbanism, Reinventing Inner Ring Suburbs, and his article, Crafting Authenticity, graced the cover of the magazine in June and July of 2015. Sean provides a distinct focus on design process, and he also serves on the Urban Land Institute's Entertainment Development Council. Sean, welcome. And then? And then our third presenter is Dan Bergner, probably the best kept secret in the business, but no longer. He is indisputably a tenacious person who guided the success of sponsorships and programming for The Grove and many of Caruso's projects for over 20 years. This is the guy that y'all want to meet if you want to figure out how to program and add and monetize your open space anchors. So Dan is going to talk about some of the things to consider when you're planning a project and the good, bad, and the ugly of all that all means. So thank you, Dan, for joining us. And then we have Steve Graham, who is with Stellar Development. Steve brings together a rare combination of expertise in architecture, construction, development, and leasing. And he is also focused on some of the largest, most complicated commercial development challenges that all of us have ever faced. He seems to thrive in that arena. And he also contributes greatly to the leasing development and strategy behind some of RED's, his former employees, biggest shopping centers, including the Legends Outlets in Kansas City, the Promenade in Chenal, and Legends at Sparks Marina. So welcome, Steve. We look forward to hearing more about that and Grand Space. So I have to say a little bit about Jose Antonio Perez. He's the managing director of Agave Holdings. And I want to thank EEE because I met their leasing guy last year, and we are now working for him on this project that he is going to be discussing in detail later on. But Agave is from Mexico. It's an LLC. It's privately owned commercial real estate firm, and it specializes in the acquisition and development of generational commercial properties throughout the United States and Mexico. He has offices in Miami and Mexico City. The firm currently owns and manages more than 4 million square feet of institutional Class A office across the U.S. and Mexico, 3 million square feet in Mexico alone. And I get to tell, I ask permission. They are also, while they're a separate entity, they are part of the Jose Cuervo family, which means they own, what, 33% of the tequila market worldwide? Small company. And it's an honor to have him here. It's the first time that he's been to EEE, and I promised him that he would be well-received, and we're very, very happy that you're doing this great project in Coral Gables. Thank you, Jose.
Thank you.
Hello.
Okay. So I'm just going to show you some of the, and I'm going to sit down. These are some projects, because we don't have any time, that we were involved in. The Grove was mentioned, Americana, The Point. We were honored to redo the gardens at Rockefeller Center for the last 3 years. And it's all about driving traffic to these destinations. And I'd be happy to give you, don't struggle, because I'd be happy to give you a flash drive of this presentation, if that's okay with it. There's nothing confidential, right, guys? So you're getting all kinds of stuff because we're late. So I wanted to just let you know that you'll be able to get this presentation also. And one of the things that the good, bad, and the ugly that I want to talk about is there are oftentimes properties that start out one way, traffic isn't as great as you'd like it, the environment isn't as great as you'd like it, and Federal Realty hired us to help them on the works, which is right next door to the point that they did, on recreating some of the, enhancing some of the areas where people gather. And so this had been open about a year, and then they had us come in and redo it. And I want to thank Mark Levine from FRCH. Nelson, are you out there? He's an architect for this project. He did a great job. So to that point, I'm going to go ahead. Again, you're going to get this, so I'm not going to worry about this. I'm going to go ahead and leave this here and have Wick come on up and start talking about, you want to just sit there?
Either way, yeah. I'll come up there.
Okay, and talk about your projects that you've been working on.
So I don't think Julie mentioned that I'm an engineer, which will make more sense as I go through this, I'm sure. But some people will say that a glass is half full. Others will say the glass is half empty. We engineers say the glass is twice as big as it needs to be.
You can sit down now. No, kidding.
What button am I pushing, the top one?
So this project is a project we worked on with Lifescapes. It's got a few interesting aspects to it. It's not officially open, although the fountain is running. The area around it's not going to be done until May. But some of the interesting factors about it is it was approved by the city of San Mateo as public art. So 100% of the cost of the fountain counted towards our public art budget, which was a huge plus for the developer. And Lifescapes team did a great job with us on presenting that to the city council, getting it approved, the art committee. The other thing is it's unique in the fact that it's got live plant material inside the fountain, and it's a show fountain. So we had to program it and design it a little bit differently to not kill the plant material and still be interesting and exciting for those around it.
We're very grateful.
Yeah.
Don't kill the plants.
Hopefully that works. Next project, if it comes up, is in Meridian, Idaho, which is outside of Boise, an area I'd never been until we did the project. It's kind of a town square type of development, and it's been immensely successful. And what's interesting is we actually maintain this project now, so I've been back there several times. But you talk to the community around, and people from hundreds of miles come there just to visit the center. Of course, see the fountain, I think, is the main reason they come. But it's really been very successful for that reason. And the space is designed with a lot of flexibility in mind. So what you see here is some tables and seating set up for an event. We went to a film preview in that very area. I think Santa's there at Christmas time. So they have a lot of flexibility there with the space, which is important. And then you've got food and beverage on all sides of it. And you can go to the next one if you want, Julie. And when we were actually building the fountain, one of the restaurateurs came out and said, hey, we'd kind of like to build a patio out next to this fountain. And so they did, and that was a boon for everybody. But it's interactive of a different nature, as you see the little child down there on the right-hand side, which is kind of what makes the whole thing worthwhile for us. This project's in Salt Lake City, completely other end of the spectrum. This is a natural stream. It was designed and built to mimic the South Fork of City Creek, which once flowed through downtown Salt Lake City. So that, there's 1,200 feet of it, runs through the center of the retail center. One section of it actually has native trout in it, and so that's heated and cooled year round. And the other part of it's chemically treated where it's near the buildings and glass. There's also a number of architectural features there throughout the space. This project's in Las Vegas. Interesting, it was downtown Summerlin, intended to be a walkable, vibrant downtown area, which I think they did an outstanding job of. There are several water features there. designed to be water sensitive, since Las Vegas is in the desert, obviously. The other interesting thing is that they've incorporated sculptural elements here. It's a little bit different than some of the show fountains and some of the things you see in some retail areas. And each one of these provides gathering space for people to hang out, which is what everybody really wants in these spaces. And the younger generation, you can see them here, even though this pop jet tabletop type fountain is not designed to be interactive, they interact with it all the time. So this project's one that we recently completed, also with Lifescapes, another show fountain, smaller scale show fountain, no robotic nozzles like you typically see, but puts on quite a show. And the community here was very enthralled with this opening. It opened at a time when a lot of other centers in the area were closing. And from their Yelp reviews there, they say that it reminds them of Las Vegas. So okay. Not sure about that, but it's definitely a cool project. This is some technology that we're working on for the future of interactivity. And in interactive fountains, everybody normally thinks about people getting wet and in the water. And you know what we're seeing is a desire to interact without necessarily getting wet. So this is some machine technology where, in the Zamboni there, computers tracking that around, and you've got projection mapping on the ice that you can do almost anything you want with. And Dan will probably talk about ways that that could be turned into revenue. Same thing here, your projection mapping the people that are skating around. You could do the same thing in a center with people walking through the area. This is some laser technology that recognizes not only people, but features. Pretty cool stuff, pretty simple. And this is something that we're working on in our studio. It's actually our choreographer and the software that we use for our show fountain design and implementation, where hand gestures can actually make the fountain jets move in different ways. And we've actually, since filming this, have done a full-scale mock-up in our test pond and done some real-life stuff. So that's what we see coming down the pike.
Thank you, Wick.
You're welcome.
Sorry about cutting you off.
No worries.
It's great stuff.
I think I'll stay seated. Julie asked us to talk about lessons learned and in some ways the negative side of this, and it reminded me that we almost always do it the wrong way when we're talking about open space. How many times have you not been at a table with architects and designers, and there's trace, and there's a red marker for retail, and there's a blue marker for residential, and there's maybe a darker red for theaters, and then somebody gets out that green marker and they make a big old big ass green spot, and everybody says, that's fantastic. Yes, there's our open space. Then you have to reverse engineer what that's gonna be. You have to get a fantastic landscape architect. It has to be programmed. And in fact, it wasn't ever really thought about who it was for and why it was there in the first place. So the projects I'm going to show you right now are very recent competitions, actually, that my firm, Retail Design Collaborative, won. And in every case, when we were the jury or the panel or the people selecting us, said, you knew what to do with the open space. You figured out what to do with that, and you thought about that before you thought about the buildings. And though I think some of the architecture's compelling, it really is about the open space. The first one is in the Chicago market, extremely successful shopping center, one of the best open space shopping centers in the United States, Oak Brook Center. And what did Oak Brook Center really need?
The right button, the right arrow.
It really needed a great street. So when you think of Chicago, I think of Great Street, Michigan Avenue. It's one of those places that you just feel like you're part of the action when you're walking down the street. So we couldn't really add a better landscaped portion to that shopping center. And the weather is obviously an issue in Chicago, although it doesn't affect sales. So this was the image that I think won us this competition, and that was that we figured out how to make a great street that surrounded and sort of encapsulates the shopping center and creates a new kind of a retail space. And I think that we all know that designing sidewalks is a very essential part of open space design. It's not all just parks. This is a shopping center in San Diego, a very class A plus luxury center. Again, we couldn't really do much better as far as the tenant mix, but there was really nowhere to hang out, no way to spend time. So again, when we won the competition for this, they remarked that we really figured out how to occupy the space. We understood that the customer, largely about 50% of the customer base here is international. They want to rest. They want to enjoy the fact that they're in San Diego. They don't want to be rushed. And finally, another San Diego project, the sort of re-envisioning of Horton Plaza, one of the sort of seminal retail projects. When I was in school, we studied it, you know, in depth, John Jardy's sort of early masterpiece. I think what this was all about is figuring out how you blur the lines between shopping, dining, and, as you can see in some of these images, workplace. A lot of this shopping center is going to be redeveloped, retail and workplace. So there should be no real distinction in the open space design between what you're doing. You're either eating, you're hanging out, you're shopping, you're waiting to see a movie, or you're just spending time. And we really wanted to spend a lot of time on this one, really defining who the customer was. And in this case, it was very much an office customer who was techie, who was young, who really, it's their third home, it's their third place, it's their home, their homes are tiny. This is the place that they can sort of spend their time and hang out. So whether it's yoga, whether it's just eating, whether it's, once again, just having conversations or working on their laptops, really that was the focus of our open space design for this.
Thank you, Sean. Dan?
So we have seen some interesting ways to design the invisible anchor, but how do we activate and how do we get a return on investment? The solution is simple, but the execution is very difficult. It can be summed up as this. When guests of the center stay longer, feel good about their experience, then they spend more. When guests spend more, tenant sales increase, and the landlord receives increased percentage rental, parking revenue, advertising, and sponsorship revenues. These are all indirect increases in revenue and property value. My slides today are to emphasize how do I differentiate my property, create direct revenue, and use sustainability to the benefit of my property. The first slide is about taking an old idea and adding a new idea to differentiate oneself and have the guests feel good and spend more time. This occurred this year at City Hall in San Francisco. The idea of adding trails to an ice rink and combining an activity with food, drink, and entertainment around the ice rink actually comes from Europe. Wiener Estrom, and they won't let me ever visit that country because of the way I pronounce the name, occurs in Vienna every year. People come from all over to skate on a rink and ice trails through trees and enjoy food and drink pavilions along the ice. Just as Americans play cornhole, Europeans love curling. The second slide.
Which one is it? It's that one right there, yeah.
The second slide is about design, technology, and revenue. Please note how sleek this outdoor interactive directory advertising display looks. It is built to work in the outdoors and is guaranteed 10 years by a global technology company. This display unit offers an interactive directory, advertising display, selfies, Wi-Fi, cell phone revenue, 3D wayfinding, and consumer analytics. If desired, you can run gaming videos on it. The unit provides entertainment and convenience to the guests, direct revenue to the landlord, and provides data for better decisions. Best of all, it provides a national digital advertising network to reach wealthy and influential people in hard-to-reach markets that were previously not accessible to advertisers. Depending on the market, the cost of this can be zero to the owner, but the revenues are substantial. The third slide is on sustainability and city requirements. After working 20 years at Caruso, I am impressed with the design and function of this solar structure. Finding a solar panel system design that pleases Renzo Piano helps provide a LEED Gold designation and produces a positive ROI is a winner. In addition, many companies are looking for sustainability programs to associate with their ad campaigns, producing sponsors. Besides helping the landlord, it brings shade for the top of the parking structure and gives the top of the structure ambiance and safe and a safe feeling. The system allows sunlight through it and it captures the indirect light on the underside. I have been asked to present mistakes that are made in development and on existing projects. Common development issues are typically a lack of planning. There are three areas where this occurs. Running out of money when the center opens and having to cut back on programs and marketing versus having funds for future opportunities. Not having any center programming in place versus having programs in place that can be used to create sponsorship opportunities. The timing of programming the center and common area is done just prior to or after opening versus starting the process in the design development stage. The one major thing that I've heard and seen throughout this conference is that you need to connect all the parts. There's more than one discipline that creates direct revenue. A frequently asked question is, I have good center sales and good foot traffic at my property, but limited advertising and sponsorship revenue. How do I increase my property's revenue? Rule number one, revenues for the common area are about people, not real estate. Rule number two, you need to know the objectives of your potential advertiser sponsor. Rule number three, advertisers and agencies are looking for the greatest reach to their potential customers for the lowest cost. Rule number four, sponsors look for how the center's assets benefit the guest and sponsor. A common mistake is to market the center to sponsors as if they were tenants. One needs to present programs and features that resonate with the brand's marketing program. Sponsors have too little time to create programs or spend time on creating a program. They need fast, prompt answers and solutions. Another form of mistake is thinking that the brand has a multitude of ways to activate. So if you show them the space, they will develop it to their needs. It is important to know that they are looking for you to show them how your program and the center helps them sell more product. Just as retail real estate is changing, so is the advertising industry because of the internet and a new digital technology. Advertising online gives the advertiser qualitative analytics. You can see numerically what sales your advertising creates. Not so with out-of-home advertising, which is the main advertiser in shopping centers. New digital advertising is changing the out-of-home market too. In the coming years, you will see advertisers seeking advertising in national digital networks rather than seeking the main designated marketing areas. And basically, that's TV lingo for large markets that TV stations cover. So I think I have exceeded the time allowed on my presentation, and you will not want to miss the upcoming real estate projects.
Thank you.
Thanks, Dan. Steve. That's nice. Mm-hmm.
Well, I've been very fortunate to be involved in three projects where the focus of the streetscape and hardscape were really important. And before I share a little bit about those three, I think if we all took a second and wrote down our six favorite lifestyle centers in America, first of all, many of them would be the same. But I think all those legacy type projects, all I guarantee will have amazing streetscape and hardscape experiences. And so the value of what all these design professionals that I'm sharing up here with as a developer is really incredible. The second thing I'd like to share as a developer is one of the biggest challenges is the streetscape and hardscape gets executed at the end of a project. So it takes a developer who has the courage and the belief and the understanding of how important the streetscape and hardscape is, because when you get to the end of most development projects, we've usually given some of the special tenants too much money, and we're possibly over budget. So this first project is the legends of outlets in Reno, Nevada. It's in Sparks, actually. And the reason why I'm showing these slides is the theme of the center is around famous legends in Nevada. And that was what was created to help draw people from a larger trade area. But what's interesting is there was a beautiful piece of art focused on the cut trout that's native to that area, and a beautiful fountain dedicated to the Pony Express. But this simple fountain in the middle of the center, that's a couple granite boulders with the water bubbling out of it, always has the most people around it, and is probably the most just because of how it's engaging. The second project I was fortunate to help with is the Legends Outlets in Kansas City. And similar, this project needed to have a large trade area. So the Legends theme was created, and there are over 100 famous legends from the state of Kansas featured. But it isn't the Eisenhower Fountain, which is beautifully done, or the diorama of Amelia Earhart, who is from Kansas. But this center area, this fountain, that people can engage with, they can sit along the side of it. In the summer, the kids get in it. And that's really what brings people, and is really a great focus of this project. I'm very fortunate to be part of the development team for the Grandscape project in Dallas, Texas. Nebraska Furniture Mart, the anchor retailer and owner of the shopping center, is open. It's a store designed to do 1 billion sales a year. They have an average travel distance of 250 miles. And they saw what happened in Kansas City, where they were neighbors in the Legends project that I shared earlier. And they decided they wanted to do it themselves in Dallas. So what's amazing about the Grandscape project is they're spending more per square foot on the streetscape and hardscape than they are on the buildings. They have a $40 million technology budget that will be part of the guest experience that'll be unlike others. And just like the great retailers of today that are omnichannel and using digital as well as the physical presence to be successful, they are using the streetscape and hardscape both digitally and in the experience to provide a very special place. This fountain that you see here will be a 3D mapping experience at night as an example, purchasing all mature trees to come in the center to have it feel day one amazing. And then there'll be, as I shared, an amazing integration of technology along with amazing streetscape and hardscape. So this the first phase of this project opens this fall in October. Hopefully a lot of you could come and see it, but it's been a thrill to be working with Nebraska Furniture Mart and helping them with this project.
Thank you, Steve.
Thank you. Thank you. Let me get closer here.
Si.
So after listening to some of the beautiful projects that you guys have done and all the experiences, I want to speak quickly of what we have done in the past and how we, Carlos Beckman, that is sitting here with me, when we assumed the role of the development. And luckily, we learned from a lot of mistakes while we were still on the plans and we haven't started the construction, because otherwise, the mixed-use project that we're doing now will be completely different and not as, hopefully, as successful as it's going to be. So we acquired the land. This is the piece of land. This is in Coral Gables. It's 7 acres of land, which is in the main avenue, Ponce de Leon. It took us 3 years to assemble the whole site. And then to get the permits before the city of Coral Gables and the entitlements, since it's the biggest project in the history of the city, took us another 2 years. And that was when Carlos and I took over the development role, and we found out that it was beautiful. We got the maximum FAR possible, but it was something that it was really not buildable. It was buildable, but there was a lot of things missing, like the retail was really convoluted. There was not a straight paths. We didn't have any open plazas. As you can see, the render in front of there, in the picture, I'm sorry, there's a big park in front of us that is a park owned by the city. But the previous design, it was completely blocked from the park, so we were missing that opportunity of having open space. So we just bit the bullet, and everybody was laughing at us, and said, because we went back to the city to try to renegotiate everything and actually bring down the FAR in a city that is complicated to get FAR, because we were convinced that we needed to have open spaces. So what you can see here is now the new current design. On the left side is what is already on the construction, phase one, which is going to be ready by May 2020. And let me show you here. I'm sorry, here. On the left side, you can see that's the office building. Which is, we have two towers of offices, completely 450,000 square feet of offices, 172 rental apartments, 245-key hotel. It's 4.5 stars high-end with 25,000 ballroom and meeting spaces. And the first and second floor, which you can see better here, is 165,000 square feet of retail. The biggest decision that what we needed to take, and we assumed taking it, and it was a big gain, we think, with the city, is that we gave up the center of the project, and we end up taking like 1 acre of access public space for the plaza, for the main project. And let me show you. This is the one I want
to show.
Oh, sorry, you like that one, right? So after 1 year, and exactly 1 year ago here, as Julie was mentioned, our brokers, they gladly met her on the elevator, and we were introduced in Las Vegas for a 15-minute coffee, and we spent like 2 hours talking. And after that, they came up with this beautiful design. That is just our plaza on the side of the project, which again was 1 acre. And as you can see, we have a lot of water features, lawns. There's a couple, you cannot see them, it's very small, but there's a couple of, we call them green conference rooms, which is really AC offices on the park that you can rent for private events, for meetings, and a lot of activity, seating area, shades, most of what you have seen with LiveScapes, and Julie can speak more about it.
Otro lado.
And of course, as you can see, the design is very Coral Gables, architectural, Mediterranean wise, because that lets you build much more FAR, and they let you build much more. But over the time of these 3 years of development, we managed also to get some much more modern elements. As you can see, the project is three blocks, so we have two crossing streets in the middle. And over the time, we managed to get those modern elements that goes more with a contemporary design and having the glass and the steel. And this is the model that we just got last week from LiveScape, so you can get a more closer idea of what's going to be. And again, the idea, going back also to what Dan was saying, what we want to do here is to interact and have our tenants that they're going to have offices there, they can also can live there, can shop there, can go to restaurants, and just meet and gather with all the people around the place and the plaza without the need of having to go into any other places. And of course, with the internet that everybody shops online and they do the groceries online. So our idea with this project is precisely to create that sense of a high-end community with the concierge and hospitality services that you will get in a hotel. Aside, of course, from the hotel, I mean, even the hotel, we get some of the additional amenities, which are most of the ones that you can see in the model here, right? There's, of course, they took the chance to interact with, like 15 or 18 different species of landscapes, palm trees, shades. We need a lot of shade because we're in Florida, the weather, the sun, et cetera. So you can see here a little bit more of the renders. Sorry.
Can I also say, Jose, one thing that they did have involved in this, which was interesting, is they had an obligation to keep an historic building.
Yeah.
Which was a challenge. And this project was also, it was bought out of bankruptcy, right?
Yes, we were lucky to get the first portion of the land on 2011. It was a distressed asset. But after that, there was still a couple of pieces of land and a couple of acres that we need to assemble. Yeah. So we can get the approval from the city to build this massive project, taking account that we're crossing two streets and so on. But again, that's what it took us so time, and gladly we took the time, and again, I think that most of you guys and your developers, and you know that, mm-hmm. it took us, it was a big decision even to convince our board in Mexico that we need to step back and reduce the FAR because we're going to sacrifice an acre for a public park. They say, you guys are crazy, it took us so time. But we are convinced more than ever with all the activity that is going to come in the programming of the park and what LiveScape is doing on the park. There's another component to the city of Coral Gables that is the art in public spaces, that you need to spend 1% of the whole, although the hard cost of the project, in art within the project. So that plaza that you see in that design, aside from the design from LiveScape, is going to have several millions of dollars in different art sculptures, program of art. So the idea is that we Within the week, Coral Gables and mainly the CBD is really active. I mean, there's a lot of headquarters for Latin America. I mean, one of our, we have another building there. And we have tenants like Heineken, Diageo, Tiffany, HBO, Millicom. And all of those tenants are looking for precisely, I mean, they live around, the families, they go to school. And over the weekends, there's not really a nice place to gather. You have a lot of closed malls and open spaces, but not really a plaza like this one that we hope to create and come to a fruition in 2.5 years. Because the first phase is the center of North Central. It's going to be in 2020 and 21, the whole project. So that's where we are. Thank you.
Thank you. So we have 5 minutes left.
Thank you.
So does anyone want to ask a question? Because I can do it. But if there's anybody that has a burning question that wants to ask a question, is there anybody out there that wants to? Otherwise, I'll ask a couple. No? Okay. Anybody? Okay. So remember, just give me your cards and I'll make sure you get the presentation. So don't worry about that. And the executive summary. So, Wick, I wanted to ask you, what are some of the ways that Water Futures can increase foot traffic?
Well, I think, you know, a lot of people are attracted to water naturally. It's human nature. And Water Futures have been part of gathering places from the beginning of time. Back in the beginning of time, they were more functional than entertainment. But now they can serve as many different ways of providing entertainment to all different ages.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to ask Sean, because you've got this intriguing question you wanted me to ask you. These are his words, okay? Size matters. How do you, as an architect, determine how much space is the right amount of any given open space on a project?
So I think that goes back to the example I was saying about the big pen and the big green space. How much is the right space is exactly who is using the space, whether it's going to be used for concerts, whether it's going to be used for festivals, whether it's going to be used for very intimate gatherings. I think what the best solution is when it can do all of those things. So a project that Julie and I worked on together, the Hillsdale Shopping Center, that space is smaller than we would have liked it to be, but it feels expansive. It feels very, it feels like a living room. At the same time, it feels like a very cohesive space. What we were trying to do with our streetscape, how wide does a sidewalk need to be to create that sense of intimacy, at the same time allow for sidewalk cafes, at the same time allow for all of the uses you would want, and the crowds of people that you anticipate having. I think the worst thing that we can do, and it goes back to, you know, sort of sacrificing very valuable real estate that could be leasable space for open space that's actually not very usable. The other piece of that, Julie, I think is watching people and watching what they do and being very flexible and changing. Jaromir Steiner, I remember about probably 15 years ago, used to hire sort of German kids during the summer to follow people around and see how long they spent at a fountain or how long they spent under a tree. Now we have phones that will do all of that for us. But being able to be sort of reactionary to what the customer is doing, I think that solves the size problem as well.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you. So Dan, you have an interesting question. What revenue sources are built into the common area when it's designed, both direct and indirect?
Okay.
In 5 seconds or less. Just kidding. Oh, no, I'm not kidding. No, I'm kidding.
Basically, you don't want to overpopulate your area with signs.
And when, let me ask you a question, because as landscape architects, this has always been a concern of mine. When do we get you guys involved early? I mean, what does early mean? You know, at the concept level? Because most of the developers I know don't involve someone like you until long after it's already been figured out, unfortunately.
Well, following up with what Sean says, you know, everything has to have a purpose and it has to have a meaning and it has to make sense. Mm-hmm. So for, you know, maybe 5 to 10 hours a time, you can hopefully have someone, or architects are good at this, but have someone take a look at it and tell you where your problem spots are and how they would lay it out, and then take that advice and move forward.
Mm-hmm. And Steve, at what point do you involve the the people who are going to be property managers, the programmers? How do you set up your way of working? Do they get involved pretty early, or?
Oh yeah, absolutely. The Grandscape they've had a technology expert involved with the project for probably 4 or 5 years, working with all the top providers in that industry, so that that the technology part of the center can be absolutely as outstanding as the tenants that we're bringing, as outstanding as the streetscape and hardscaping. So it's a very important part, and it's not. I don't know how you'd start, you know, lay down a project and get it figured out. But
see, I don't know if anyone out there has had this experience, but my guess is you all have. Is that we get involved? We need a site plan. We need, you know, a concept building. Then we get involved. But rarely have we ever had someone like Dan involved early, or we encourage the developer to invite the property managers and maintenance people and so forth, simply because we need to make sure that it functions for everyone. And I don't think we're really good at generally doing that. I think we're getting better, but I think that's a critical part of having a successful project, is we actually really need the collaboration of all people as early as we can justify it. And Jose?
Probably not running.
I don't know if you guys saw his picture, but he is the right guy. The guy in the ad is not the right guy. So
my younger brother, no.
Pretty funny. I mean, I'm going, boy, that does
that's
not
look
like
Jose.
Am I losing my mind?
They were expecting someone else.
It's pretty funny. Anyway, so Jose, what was the biggest challenge you had when you know, in deciding how you were going to develop this project and when?
Well, there were too many, as we can assess, but I mean, focus on the subject of this conversation, the forum, aside from the construction and all the sacrificing that we did, that we think that we didn't sacrifice anything, was really the best decision. It was more to try to come to, and it took probably over a year to define exactly the right concept. I mean, I don't know how many mixed-use projects within the U.S. to see what has worked, what hasn't worked, from California to Portland and down to Atlanta. And the challenge was, we knew what we wanted, but didn't know how to, I mean, it was the first mixed use project that we're doing, but it was just to come to that conclusion that so far we have done office buildings. Hopefully the answer so far been very successful, I'm sorry. But it's just to transmit that not only the hotels need to provide that hospitality and concierge services, we have to permeate that into our office tenants, into our retail clients and tenants, to our tenants on the residential, to provide that experience that is not just as a tenant that you rent the space and you don't see them until you have the renewal. You have to be there, you have to curate it, you have to go and see if they need something. The program that Dan was through, I mean, all the programming of those several events, I mean, they love that, the tenants love those kind of events. And yeah. Just to understand that concept, that is not an office building with tenants. They are your clients, and you have to treat them like they go to a favorite hotel, and they want to be spoiled. And when they get to the valet parking, they don't want the key to be in the middle. They want to grab it in the hand. Mm-hmm. Those kinds of details to provide that service. And it's not that we just figured it out. We just took some time to realize, and getting again with all the different projects, those different experiences. And that together now with the big plaza and the art component, what you guys are doing, I think we're pretty confident that's going to be a big success. But it's all about that. I mean, whatever you give, I think you need to give more. Always give more to the tenants. It would not be enough. So this kind of forums and, I mean, all these different technologies and experiences, that's precisely what we as developers are looking at, going, can entertain your tenants and the clients and so to be successful. And they can, as you were saying also, then they can stay longer, shop more, eat more, pay more parking, just stay on the site and find activities. If it is their business within the week or the weekends for the families. No?
Yeah.
It's basically that, the quality of the services.
It's cocktail time. And I want to thank all of you guys for agreeing to be here. Thank you.